Welcome to Under Construction with Chadwicks. I'm Donagh Callaghan, and later we're going to be hearing from Richard in Sunnis in our Suppliers Corner. But today we are balancing the books on the podcast. Previously, we have heard from hurlers, fantastic rugby players and amazing GA players. But today we're talking about one of our most popular sports with a 20% increase in the attendees at the League of Ireland. Soccer is flying. And to help us celebrate our domestic game, we are delighted to have two of the greats in the country. Bohemians captain Keith Buckley, you're more than welcome. How are you getting on?
Good, not bad.
You're injured at the moment, Keith.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, sorry to hear that, but the league is going really well. We're going to get into it in a little bit, but good to see you're upbeat and looking forward to it.
You always are beat already.
Yeah, exactly it. We also are joined by an Irish icon of soccer, culture and general crack, the brilliant Roddy Collins. Roddy, how are you?
Jeez, Donagh, that's brilliant. That's the best introduction I've ever heard.
I do.
That envelope Roddy on the counter Collins, on the way out.
I believe it. Absolute icon when it comes to it. How are you getting on?
Living the dream, Donagh.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm having the crack, living the dream, dedicating my life. I'm in the last quarter of the game to staying as healthy and as happy as possible, tormenting as many people as possible, driving everyone mad. Yeah, especially my kids and my grandkids. No, I'm happy, yeah. All good. Happy out, as they say.
We saw you on the Tommy Tiernan show and we may chat back a little bit about that. It gave us a great overall stuff. But Roddy, I must say to you, for me, just from characters in sport is what you look for, and you have it in spades. It's always great to be around you and listen to you. Massively, obviously, you know, fortunate to. We used to follow the Rod Squad in the Irish rugby.
Jesus, stop, will you?
We loved it, Roddy.
Oh, no,
I didn't.
I was mortified. Actually.
Were you?
Oh, well, I watched it once in little bits, but some of the stuff on it was horrendous. But look. It was. I wasn't coming home. When I went to Carlisle, I was going straight to Old Trafford to replace Alex Ferguson, that in my mind.
Yeah.
So when I was asked to do it, I got a few quid, by the way. I was asked to do it and I'd done it. But, oh, geez, some of it was embarrassing. But look, it is what it is. I can't undo it now, you know.
Yeah.
We just got to crack over. That's the main thing.
Yeah, dead right. Yeah. Keith, we touched on it there. 20% increase in attendees in the League of Ireland. Soccer's flying in the country, isn't it? It must be brilliant for you to play in such a vibrant game, but also it's, you know, putting bread on the table. It's brilliant that you can do it at home.
Yeah, like you said, bread on the table. Before this, I was a parent decorator and lucky enough to have a 3-year contract to be able to play full-time football. But yeah. I think it's since the COVID, as you say, like that, the increase has been brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, and it's local football and it's a great credit to both clubs and things. Pats, now Shells even. Balls have done great work in the community. But I think you can see that in dividends now, we're paying in. There's, I think there's Pats and Balls and nice Shells and Rovers. There's a market there and I think we all need to get behind it. From every sort of the Irish football community. Like, if you had volunteers from every certain club and put them together and say, listen, can we push this on? You'll have thousands. But, you know, we're banging on the same drum since Roddy's playing about certain things and facilities need improving, you know, but we need to keep pushing that though.
But for people to see you, for young fellows, young boys and girls to see you in the area, you know what I mean? Be getting bread and milk where you're shopping, stuff like that. That's important. That's where it grows.
That is the difference. Like, you know, you're probably on a different level than I was. They probably never come across you, you know, and bringing lads over to, say, Liverpool and stuff. You don't see this.
Yeah.
And the likes of ourselves, whether we like to know or not, we play a big role in these kids. You know, I got a kid up there a couple of weeks back into the dressing room and his mom was saying he hasn't stopped telling everybody about it. And like, sometimes we don't really, in the bubble, you don't see that effect you have with them. But now I have a bird's eye view, I'm injured, I'm seeing a bit different where I'm always just focused on playing. Now I'm seeing that other side of it and it's great, you know. And like, one of them kids like me, years ago, I used to go to Shelburne games and look up to Owen Hurries and stuff and eventually playing with them, you know. And one of them kids probably tell me in 10, 20 years, you know, hopefully I manage them and say, look, I remember you brought me in and done this, you know.
Yeah. Roddy, it is exciting to see the league getting the recognition it deserves because it has been fantastic for so long, but it's really important we keep that going.
It is, Donagh, but we have to grasp the nettle, you know. It's not. I've seen it come and go in 40 years in League of Ireland and I've seen it never as good as this. However, you know, the wave can come. We need to cash in on it.
Yeah.
We need government to get involved. Like we all know about the Casement Park and we all know about, you know, Croke Park investments in GAA. You know, we need people within the FBI to lobby the government stronger and they're not doing it. If people will go to a game of football, for a game of football on the night out. But if the facilities, you get the winter's night and you're in the back of Talca Park and you're soaked and you have to travel back to Derry, it's a deterrent. So they need to get the facility sorted out. That's the most important.
Is that the biggest issue?
Yeah. One. Come here. I played at 18, my debut in League of Ireland football. And I was just telling Keith, and I went back to the ground that I played in about 5 years ago as a manager. Every single deficiency that was in that club in the dressing rooms was still there.
Yeah,
and this was a highly populated area that wants to progress. You know, but look, come on. We have 5 grounds, they said the TV companies will go to.
That were just capable of actually putting on an event for that.
Well, for the visibility, for, you know, the optics of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to a game, or I watch a game on the telly, and I look and I see a derelict site behind the goal.
Yeah, okay.
Come here, it's like boxing, right? You go to a main event. Sky doesn't sell out a main event. You pay 20 quid for a ticket. You're ringside before them boxers come in. They darken the lights behind, bring everyone down, because it's something to be enjoyed, you know, for a viewer. Yeah. But League of Ireland football, if you're not a connoisseur of football, which 90% of the people watching the game don't know about tactics, do you want to see something exciting and listen to the crowd? It's not happening. And for me, if we don't look at Rovers, and every, I think there should be a criteria where every club, and in so many years, have to have that, whether it's council backed or whether it's benefactors coming in. They shouldn't be allowed playing the league unless they have that or seem to be trying to achieve that, because I've seen it come and seen it go, and everyone gives it lip service, right? But I'd be worried, to be quite honest with you. You know,
we'll get to it and let's rip into it. But Keith, I'll go to you. From a player's point of view, the facilities for ye to be professional, what are they like? You know, Roddy's chatting about the stadiums and not being able. How is it from your end?
I'm playing the league now 11, 12 years and probably the same dressing rooms are the same. I won't say a certain club, but we're only talking about the dressing rooms are the same. And he's only talking about certain urinals in some dressing rooms are just partitioned from the showers. So, like, it's okay, the noise on the outside, but people do forget on the inside as well. The facilities for players, it has to be improving. Like, as much as I'm a Bowes man, as you said, like, Rovers have hit the standard in terms of facilities. You know, when people walk onto the pitch, like, there's a four stands there now.
Yeah.
The pitch is immaculate. The facilities are brilliant. And you can bring a family there and not be too worried, as you say, during the winter night to be soaked.
Mm. But they're getting it right on both fronts, lads, to be fair, aren't they, facility wise? I know it's tough to say, believe me, but like four in a row as well, it does show that if you're joint up off the pitch and on the pitch, you can have success.
No, 100%, and we're the chasing pack, you know, and it's up to everyone else. They set the standards on and off the pitch, as you say, you know, they've seen a long term plan. I think it's South Dublin County Council that own the stadium, and they put a plan in place, and that's it, you know. And look, they might have certain investors, they say, but again, you can put so much money into certain clubs, you still have to produce on the pitch at the same time, you know.
But sorry, Donal, you said something at the very opening about if you've got all the volunteers, that's the problem. Volunteers aren't going to progress. You need an industry where people are held accountable for what they've to achieve within the club. You know, a volunteer can go, oh, well, I've done my best, I'm doing it for nothing, I'm a volunteer. We need an industry where everybody involved in the club is on a wage. And this is what I'm saying, lobby the government, because the government are looking at League of Ireland football, well, maybe 30,000 people attending games, not much votes in that one, you know. We give them money, look what they've done over the years, they've washed it down to Swanee. So we need industry where, say, okay, if this industry employs 10,000 people, just for off the figure, what are we going to get back on PRSC? What are we going to get back into our corporates, you know? And then we'll have people that can get involved and then they'll spend the money. That's what we need. Like,
yeah.
All this time, honestly, Donegan, I've heard all this before.
I know that. But if you look, and I know it's a totally different league, but if you look at what Man City have done, they've done what you're on about, really professional, but they've also done a brilliant job of looking after the volunteers and empowering them into the community so that you bring on the games from all around. So it's a bit of
both.
Yeah,
but that's politics. They're to wash with. That's not a necessity. That's politics.
Yeah,
League of Ireland volunteers are a necessity.
Yeah.
I remember when I was manager of Bowes and there was an officer for the pitch, there was an officer for this, there was an officer for that. It was an absolute joke. And that was there to sit around the table. That was their involvement. And they wore the badge. Well, I'm in charge of this. That's wrong.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It should be what's best for the lads on the pitch. And forget it. Like, okay, Bowes are probably more famous now for their off-field involvement in you know, different political situations or you know, community programs or whatever. Show me the trophy cabinet up there. I could throw a stone in my back garden at the Daily Mount. That's what it's about. And then when you progress there, the rest comes and underpins it. So then if you go into Europe, you can give more money to donations to everyone, but, you know.
I challenge on it a little bit because that's the top end of it. You don't have to be successful as a team to, and I know we look at trophies, it's all about trophies, but being right for the community. You know what I mean? Like keep young boys and girls seeing you out there, having aspirations, being a place to go where everyone can meet up, where you feel this is an anchor. You know what I mean? You might say what you want about religion, but it seems to be where Irish people are going now, with sport.
But Donegan, do you know, because you've won enough, do you not think they want to be in your company more if you're a winner? Do you not think, like, if you win a trophy at Bowes, you might meet 50 kids every week. You win a trophy, you'll see 5,000 kids coming down. You know, it's all about success and how you gauge success. And how to gauge success in League of Ireland has been not insolvent at the end of the season, basically, or not, you know, bankrupt, or not having to pull players' wages. That was the yardstick on League of Ireland football in a lot of my time, a lot of my clubs. I worked for clubs that went bankrupt. Mm. I didn't bankrupt them. You know, because the whole business plan, and people talk about Rovers, look at the background. Ray Wilson, very successful businessman in Australia. Desmond, another one. So they can marry, it's a success with the financial, and they can be sustainable and successful. And that's what we need to strive for.
I'm going back to my sport and I just look at Munster. So the like everything, money has changed the games and it really has pushed on if you haven't got deep pockets. So Munster, I hope they win the European Cup every year, but they mightn't.
Yeah.
But you'd measure success in different ways. Like bringing young homegrown boys and girls through, that is success as well, isn't it, Keith? You know, yeah, being
it is
right for the area.
To the club at the time was... As you said, like, well, 15 years since, I think 16 years since Bowes doing it in 2008. And you start talking about the push what it is now. You'd be lucky to get 2,500 through the gate when you're winning stuff then.
Yeah.
And now we're getting, haven't won that in 15 years, 4,000. But imagine then, like, there's queues out the door to get the Daily Mount. You were there last week. Imagine then if you win a couple of trophies on top of that. What, expand it again.
Agreed.
You know?
Yeah, but Keith, when I took over Bowes, the average gate was 800 people. 33 months later, the average gate was 4,000. People want to be involved in success.
Yeah.
No, but
there's no doubt in that. But to Keith's point as well, they want to be around people that share the same values and they want to look on the pitch at a team that reflects where they're from and what they're about and be proud of that. And we know sport as well. I this is my own personal opinion. You don't need to win every time to show that. Of course, we all want to be competitive, but sometimes it's enough to be good
I
people of the team.
I think it's easier for us as we get older to see that. But as when I'm a young lad growing up, all I want to do is win. You don't, and yourself. But as you get older, you see different types of scenarios. But my job is to win trophies at the club, and I haven't done that in 15 years.
Could
I ask then, is what Rovers have done on the pitch good for the league, or is it bad?
Brilliant. And I hope to win another 4 in a row, and I'll get slaughtered by Bowes, but I don't care because they're doing it right.
Mm.
They're the model club. So you don't bring them down as we do in Ireland. Oh, bring them down. It's not. It's brilliant. We try and go to where they are. And then they try to step up to another level in European competition, qualify for knockout stages every year. That brings the whole thing forward. And then what happens is Keith won't leave the country to play somewhere else. Other kids won't leave to go to League 2 or League 1 or the Championship. And then you'll have Championship players want to come play here. You have to grow the whole thing. You know what I mean, Donegal? Like back in the day, right back then, probably before your time, there'd be 300 watching Leinster. There were 300. So they're all Indigenous players, really.
Yeah.
So the ones coming in New Zealand, or did they help it? Did they make it more sexy? Well, that's the same at soccer.
Yeah. I went to my brother. He played in an Interpro, Munster versus Leinster in Dúradoyle. So it was in one of the club grounds. And I'd say if there was 300 people, there was a lot. And not only that, I'd say you could say 80% of them were family.
Yeah.
And now it's filling out the Aviva.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is because I credit the RFU. They got the model right. But what about our own even, let's just chat about Damien Duff, having someone like him back in Shells. You know what I mean? That type of calibre of player and coach in the league, it must be a good thing if we're chatting about...
Like, he's a character. You have to give him that. And, you know, you have to understand, like, he's over 100 caps for Ireland.
Yeah.
And he doesn't come in and... look, speaking to lads when you speak of him, that he doesn't think he's above anybody else, which is good, you know. And you just listen to people talk about him. And I have a friend that played there saying that when he went to, I think it was Rovers 15th, so professional, he told him, we need to train more. So it was 6:30 in the morning for training under 15 years of age. And he'd have parents saying, he said, well, if they want to get better, the contact time with the ball needs to be more, because they're probably training 2.5 hours a week, an hour that could be running. So if you want to get more contact time with the ball, you need to put the effort in. I lived away in Australia for a year. You should see the willing to learn and to train over there. Yeah. I'd be doing some one-on-one sessions at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
they go to school, under school, and if they're involved in soccer over there, they do a little bit of practice there, and then they're training the team 3 nights a week.
Yeah.
And they want to get better. And if you want to get better, you have to put the time in.
Of course you do. But talking about Damien, Damien's in a privileged position. He's brilliant. I think he's fantastic. I went down to watch his first ever pre-season game with Shells just to see how he'd react and there was an assessor there one of those folders, you know, referee's assessor.
Yeah.
And he's looking and he's gone and he come over beside me. How are you, Rod? I says, how are you? What's the crack? I'm just assessing. We want to have a look at Damien's conduct just before the season starts. And I says, right, okay, stuff. It was a friendly. It was a friendly. 3 weeks later, he was doing somersaults. He was bashing everyone. But he's in a privileged position because Damien is financially sorted. There's no problem with that. I'm best of luck to him. And he's a great, he'll always be an icon in my book, right? We've managers who can't pay their mortgage, right? That will just say, yes or no, sir, right? And that's what's holding the league back as well. You need to bang that table and go into a chairman and say, we can win this league, but I need Donaghy, I need Bucco, and I need someone else. And I want them. And if I don't get them, I'm walking out of here. And that's how you're successful in this. Because if you just saunter along, I'll kick on back to me, but I have to say it because it's relevant. I was managing Bowes. Oh, it was a disaster in the boardroom. I had my own plastic company. I had no problem with money. So I went in there to win. And I promised them I'd win the league. And when I went in, I knew how to win the league because I won it as a player. I knew what we needed. I got paid for my own company for players. I got fellas to sponsor buying players. Trevor Malloy was bought by a road contractor. And all against the wishes of the board. Right? And we won the double in 33 months. They hadn't won a double in 75 years, 76 years. A double in 33 months. A league, their first in 27 years, and their first cup in 11 years. And we done that in 33 months because I was banging the table. I got sacked the minute we won it, but I can understand that. But that's what we need in the league. We've too many yes men hiding. Oh, well, they would blame the lads. I blame this, I blame that, because we need to pay me mortgage. And that's what's going on, Keith.
Yeah, but
I'm trying to name them.
No.
Fill your boots, fella. Fill your boots.
But Roddy, just on that, that's a corporate side. It's like every business. You mentioned it there. So leave the soccer people look after the soccer, but leave commercially aware people looking after players and player welfare and also the other sides of it. That's right. Important.
I'm going to ask. I don't know, but I would love to put it out there. How many clubs in Ireland have a full-time professional commercial manager? I'd love to know.
Yeah.
I'd love to know. Because I worked with clubs, had nothing. You couldn't even get them on the phone.
But surely something is changing because people are voting with their feet. People are going. 20% increase. You know, I know we're going back to it, but people want to be there. And if
they want to be out of the house, Donaghy.
Okay,
seriously, like Keith said, at lockdown. Where are people going? Where are they going?
Is there an element of cost in it? Like, the cost of living now is becoming hugely. We're trying to bring 2-3 kids across to see Man United Liverpool now. A couple of hundred, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
You go down the road, local football, live football, and you're going to get it for £60 for a family. Yeah.
And it's lively. Yeah. You're going to see a great game.
That's what we have to push.
Yeah. Can we chat about Daily Mount? Your own personal opinions on, because you mentioned it there, it's Bolton. You like how the redevelopment and all that. What's your own personal feelings on that? Are you excited about it?
Yeah, I am. Hopefully I'm still there by the time comes around and get myself a testimonial.
Dead right.
No, but
we'll do the commercial for you.
No, but as we're only speaking this again, like, I hope they keep an element of what it is now.
Yeah.
And it's not just this kind of a flashy new stadium. You know, you've got the players, the new members coming in, and the members are there 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
Like, Roddy would have seen it back in the house. What some Ireland games? 44,000 is the record, I think. That we can get in there for the international games.
Yeah.
But they remember Dalyman from them days. So there has to be some kind of element that you keep within. When it's redeveloped, that's not, as I say, brand new, flashy, modern stadium.
That's hard, though. How do you keep that? You know what I mean? Because that's a point of difference. Like, it is, you know, it's so important.
That's the biggest thing that's holding that club back. Nostalgia. And down at Talca, when there's protests, keep Talca Park. Build one stadium between the two of them. Keep what you can, memories or the pitch or whatever. But saying, keeping the older members happy. The older members held the club back at my time. They held it back. I got a sponsor to come in and we wanted to create a bar for sponsors. Put Dunnigan and his company over there, book them over there. They pay £4,000 a year. They pay, and bring their friends to a game. And I had this all sorted up, a memory robe uniform. And I said, and he said, and how are the members going to get to the stand? I said, go around the long way. Oh no, that's not happening. That probably knocked back £100,000 in my day, which would have been probably a third of the budget. The members don't enjoy it. We won the league and we won the cup and we had a big marquee raking in the money. Right? And a certain man came out and he said, this would be a great club without that fucking football. That's what he said. They've done all the clubs. People drinking that bar, never seen the pitch.
But it is iconic. It, like talking about, we can't lose bits of like that. It, like we had that as well. You mentioned Holman Park, but when we redeveloped that, it was really important to us that we didn't lose. It, like something happens in Thomond when we play. It's very hard to describe, but there's a tie between the crowd and the pitch. You're representing where you're from, exactly what you're saying. It's a special place to play in. Yeah. But one of the things we thought of as players that was important to us is that we kept playing there. So we redevelop it, but we still tug out there. And like there was times that pitch wasn't probably fit for purpose,
yeah.
But we were still on it to make sure we didn't have a separation so that no one, there wasn't this big unveiling. Because I played in other rugby grounds where they've taken the heart and soul out of the place.
That can happen. But going back to Milltown, Milltown was as iconic on the south side as Daily Mount. I'll come back to Daily Mount. I could throw a stone in my back garden at the Daily Mount when I was a kid. Milltown was iconic.
They'd throw it back.
What?
They'd throw it back.
No, they keep it.
Bigger one come back.
Milltown was iconic. But look, it moved on under controversial circumstances and we had all this crime and we had everything. But you ask the people, there's 10,000, 8,000 people going to Tallinn now. They never heard of Milltown, most of them. You have to march on, right? Now you can say it was relocated and it's a different population. Daly Mount and Finsbury and Stony Batter, I was reared in them areas. I would say 80% of the people down there aren't Indigenous from that area. They're all people coming in from...
Nowadays, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's why that's important too, though, because there's the focal point. There's where you go to bring us all together. Go, you know what I mean?
Well, do you know what, Donoghue, you hit the nail on the head, because when we go to Daly Mount, which is not that often in the last couple of years, it's like a hipster's reunion down there now. Right? There's a hardcore of football supporters who back the team and all that, and they're sort of being dismissed into the corner. It's all about the hipsters from Stony Batter. If you have a season ticket.
But Roddy, like, be honest, that's what they're saying about the Aviva Stadium during the rugby at the moment. Like, it's, you know what, Roy Keane slagged Old Trafford for it at a time. You can't have both sides of it. So you can't expect the money to come into the game without, you know what I mean, having the supporters there that are paying for it. Because some people are playing for the soccer and watching it, but others are paying for a family day out and an experience.
Yeah, but you're not going to get that in Daly Mount. If, and I understand where Keith's come from. He's actually compromised discussing it, really, because if he says something about you go in tonight, you go, ah, here, Keith, give it over.
Yeah.
I wish it could be Daly renovated 20 years ago when I was there as the manager and brilliant and go down and look at that. You know what I mean? But whatever comes up is better than what it is now.
Yeah.
And my history's in my mind and my memories in my mind of Daly, you know, when I was a kid bunking in.
Happy days, everyone's jumped the wall, haven't they?
No, we got a lift over, it was called. I remember as a kid going down with the lads and getting on the pitch when the pitch was 4 foot off the terraces, right? And there was a big fence around it when it was international days. And there was a dog called Sasha, a big Afghan hound, and Paddy Dunne, the groundsman owner. We'd bunk in, have a game on the pitch, right? And then you'd go to get out, and Sasha would be there. And you'd run across the pitch, and he'd be around there.
Yeah.
So we had to walk around, who's going to sacrifice who? And then we'd all there'd be one left.
There you go.
But I was never the one left.
Yeah, exactly. You always run fast enough. But just on it, the redevelopment, how would you be about it? How do you think the supporters would be about it in terms of trying to keep that uniqueness?
I think they they would all agree. What he says, hipsters, they say, are like coming down, the people at the end of the day coming through the turnstiles.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know what way it's going to be. I don't get involved in anything to do with off the field stuff. That's not my job. But me personally, I'd love to see the floodlights somewhat kept there, because that is iconic. You know, when you see them from miles away, you can build stuff around it as well, you know. I think, you know, heading to the floodlights, you can see them from miles away. I can see them from down here sometimes. And then, as Roddy says, down Cabra, you see them from all different sides and you follow the floodlights.
But is it using it? Like, it's been used in the past, wasn't it? Tin Lizzy, Bob Marley. To actually use it, like the French are quite good at doing that. Putting a pitch somewhere and everyone using it. Maybe a GA club using it, maybe a concert using it. It's fit for purpose for all.
Bernie McGuigan made his professional debut on Daly Mount.
No way.
On the Charlie Nash European defence. So was that it? I remember he was a kid. He made it. I was at the Tin Lizzy and the Bob Marley concerts. This is my thing when I speak to prospective investors in football clubs. And they, Rod, what do you think? I say, when you buy a football club, it has to be working 24/7. It can't be just a football club twice a week.
Yeah.
You've got to utilise what you've got. You look at the space you have. That's prime land up in Daly Mount. You get up in a drone and you look, that's prime land. That's to be utilised. You know, not necessarily the pitch, maybe for a couple of concerts, you know, to because you destroy the pitch, but retail around it, right? Bars, restaurants, bring people into it. Hospitality for match days. Like, I know nothing about Greyhounds and you live up the road. I've been in Shelbourne Park maybe 5-6 times. Nice meal, you know, pick a Grey. I wouldn't have a clue. I'm not a betting man. But brilliant nights out. We need to attract people. I go to rugby, don't I know nothing about rugby.
Yeah.
I go to Aviva for the internationals, right? Great day out. I don't know what's happening, but I just like it. So we need to attract those people, as you say, from a commercial perspective. We need to attract those people as well. But also, from a player's point of view on the pitch, you don't want the Roy Keane scenario. If you're in Daly with 5,000 people, you want to hear 3,000 chanting your name.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or cheering. Because it's all part of, how can I say, it's a theatre.
Yeah.
It's like a theatre and everyone's part of it. And that's what they have to really try and create when they build it. Get the acoustics right in the small stadiums. Keep the lights 100%.
Okay, we're keeping the lights.
And then do you know what you should do then? Move the two chimneys up from ringside.
There you go, stick
put
them
the
as goals.
Long marks in the one place.
Play off that way in the first half. But it's not just Daly Mount. It just was it Dundalk last year? Wasn't it the owner fell through the chair and stuff like that? Some of the facilities around the league. We don't want to bash, but I'm just chatting about overall message. Everything needs a little bit of an improvement in terms of that, especially when we're getting numbers in the gate now.
Well, I played for Dundalk, right? So I was in the home dressing room. And then I managed in Dundalk. And with the amount of substitutes now, you can't fit a squad into a dressing room in Dundalk with bags, with kit. You can't fit them in. Wow. If the asphalt's go out and have a walk and everything, it's horrendous. And that hasn't changed. And I always found, Keith, and I don't know if you agree with me and you, Donica, when I sat to sign a player, I tell them all the facilities we have. Medical, strength conditioning, every single thing we can give, the kit, best of kit, everything. Then I discuss money. Because I know the ones that you want on your side, the money will come. And if they walk and go, well, I want this,
get lost.
And we don't have that ability to do that. When I was manager of Rovers, I brought people to Croke Park under construction. I said, we're going to be sharing that stadium when it's finished. But come in and share where we have to play at the Minnetonka Park. And when I went to Daly, Keith, I always brought people in through the car park side. Because when you walked in the big stand, that was your visuals.
You're like the equivalent to Hyacinth Bouquet, you know, you want from keeping up appearances.
Yeah, I do.
I don't fault it.
But no, it's all a perception. You have to do that. I got my free membership for, what's that place, Temple Bar Hotel downstairs, Bush Street, the nightclub. Robbie Dunn was my pal. Robbie ran the door. So I brought him and said, right, son, you've signed. There's your contract. There's your membership card for the nightclub.
Were you meant to be keeping them out of there?
No, listen. Listen, Donnega. Go in there, your VIP every Saturday night if you fancy it. Right? Sunday morning, Robbie, who was in last night?
I love it.
I'll tell you who was locked. And they all thought, James Rod's great. I brought them on, everyone to Louis Copeland's. I'd say, Louis, have you any grave diggers over coast downstairs? We can't get rid of yet. I have a couple of youngers here, we'll fit them out.
But
that was it.
Yeah. Is there a push, lads, towards Dublin, though? You know what I mean? If we look at just economics, money-wise, we look at the amount of teams in the league. Like, we see it, of course, with Limerick and hurling, Kerry with football. People will migrate, you know, where it's being played more and the level is a little bit higher. Are we in danger of probably losing the league to more Dublin teams as opposed to an overall strategy for the whole country?
We don't know. I think it was great last year with Cork coming back in. Good now, Galway coming in. They're great football clubs.
Yeah.
And we're talking about with the facilities and your team, folks on the playing pitch. Like, you look at them, Doc, when they how like successful they were under Stephen there 7-8 years ago. And like, there should be a thing that, I think it's an Ajax model where a certain amount of percentage you earn and the income is redistributed into the club. There has to be some kind of that, like, yeah, where you don't have owners coming in, taking their share and out they go, and then the club's let to rot. You know?
Yeah.
But, I don't know, in the Dublin, that, as you say, like, it's all changed now. I don't know what you were back in your time when you were signing players. Like, clubs have to house these players now also. Like, it's coming so, like, it's so, like, expensive to actually, for lads to come and rent.
Yeah.
Like, we players come from Poland, Estonia, they want to bring their wives, their girlfriends, and then that's another expense on top of things as well. Yeah. Like, but again, these are the kind of things that if you want to push, you need to get good players in, you have to look after that.
So the thing about it, we have the population.
Yeah.
We'll get the players if you can get the accommodation. And it's always going to be the strongest. And also, Donegal, if you look at Cork, Derry, when they won their leagues, I would say 60% were Dublin-based players. Not Dublin-based, but Dublin players that would travel down to play for these.
They were born in Dublin.
You know what I mean? These clubs in the other provinces, you know?
You mentioned the finances. Just looking at players that have gone, the likes of Evan Ferguson, the implications that has for a club. You know, could that nearly knock the whole league out of kilter, a big sale of a player like that?
He was with us when he came through. He was only 14 years of age, but you're saying knock the set. Like, I think there's one club that's going to be a little bit cautious with money, is boss, if you look around the whole league in terms of that. I don't think they'd directly, whatever they get, if it's a sell-on clause for having straight into the playing squad, I think they're going to, like, recently enough, the Portuguese Oscar Traynor centre, you seen that?
Yeah.
Pitch at the back, and there's that, it's a redevelopment that going on, hopefully in 2 years, then they have DCU, another 15-year lease there also. Like, it's, the club's grown, but I couldn't see them throwing big money at the playing squad. Obviously, it would help. But if he does go, I hope he goes soon.
But Fiji can be proud and successful as well. You see, this is where everyone thinks the biggest budget is going to win it. It'll give you the best chance. But if you have a proud manager who's a good motivator and he's clued in tactically and he knows how to win championships, right, you can do it on a lesser budget.
Yeah,
there's people,
absolutely.
You know, and a bigger budget brings its pressure as well, because, you know, you're expected to, like, Rovers have probably the biggest budget and they're expected to win it. But, it's... You know, you have to marry both. You have to have success.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. I'm a football manager. I played football. And all I ever done every day, Scoop, was to win. But not to win at all costs. And I'm saying it again. I left Bowes in a profit. I left Carlisle in a profit. I left Monaghan in a profit. And I left that loan in a profit. That was only $5,000, that loan. It wasn't a deficit. Bowes was $800,000. Finished their stand. Carlisle was $750,000. So you can be successful, as you call success, keeping them in the league. You can be successful, Donegal. Right, and be prudent.
Yeah.
And that's the balance you need to be.
But finance matters, doesn't it? Even
absolutely.
A run in Europe now as well, like that could really bolster your team and your squad, couldn't it?
Yeah. Well, it does. And what you said about Evan Ferguson, when the money comes in there, that will stay with Bowes. So hopefully then they will step up to the mark and equal Rovers. But this is where back in the day, you see, the thing in England, when I was in England, they'd say, that league is bankrupt, right? Keep bookies at Bowes. We get it for $5,000. Take the hand off you for that. And do you know what happened? You would have went for $5,000. That's what was happening. And I remember buying Darren Kelly from Derry. And they said, Michael Knighton was the chairman. And he said to me, no, he wasn't. Currently was. I bought Richie Ford for $100,000 off Tolkien. I haven't got 2 pence off Shell. I haven't got 2 pence. We were in administration, but I winged it and got
him. For the non-disclosure, Robbie.
It's okay. I winged it and signed him. And we got him 50. We went into administration. But thing about it is, back in the day, like Roy Keane, the kid off Sligo, what's his name? Plays for Everton.
Seamus Coleman.
They were laughing at us in England. I bought Darren Kelly for $100,000. He was the best League of Ireland centre half in the country. And they said, I'll offer 20. I said, no. No, he's worth $100,000. So I tried to create a market.
Mm.
And we got him, you know, but it was, and there was no sell-on clauses or anything like that. You know what I mean? But this is all changing. You know, you've experienced people like Damien Duff.
Yeah.
Stephen Bradley, they know the game. They've been around England, you know.
You've mentioned COVID and people's want to get back out. What about Brexit? Has that distorted the league in terms of talent pushing across? Are you seeing it with your playing pool?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's becoming a genuine younger league, I think, as well. Mm. You know, I think it's a great thing that, you know, I know one or two lads that have gone away young and they regret 16 years of age. Like, they're kids. Okay. Yeah. And they come back at 21, 22 and they feel a failure because they weren't ready.
Yeah.
So now you have these young lads that probably wait until 18, 19 if they get a chance to go away. They get blooded into the first team.
Yeah.
They're seeing what an actual men's dressing room is and how you have to train, how you apply yourself. And going across, it puts them in a better, like, they look at themselves and say, you know, I am ready. Like, I know one lad personally turned down a move last year because he wasn't ready, he said. And he's 18, and that's like brave enough decision. And it was a good contract. And he says, no, I'm not ready. I want to try and achieve in a first team environment first and then head away.
Yeah.
And going away, then they're going into a first team environment because a lot of them didn't go away 18, go 23, and that's nothing football.
Yeah, it's
is
a brutal league. It's a thing. But the other thing about it is you've brave managers now. Like, you've got John Daly up in Patson, put a 16 year old in. You've got them down in Daly Mount when thing was printed as a kid 16 play this year, did he?
16 year old. Nixon,
you know, so
Evan was 14, blooded in, and there's a lot of controversy that saying he was only a kid, but he was as big as anybody.
Yeah. But you need the managers to be. But then again, on the other side of that, Donegal, you have managers under severe pressure and they go, hold on a minute.
You mentioned him, Stephen Kenny. Like, he was nearly the pin up for the league, just the way that all panned out. You know what I mean? Did you think it was nearly bad for the league that it showed the kind of calibre within the coaching setup? That
of course. Anybody working in League of Ireland could step up to an international team, Ireland team.
What about Stephen Bradley?
No. Because people have to understand, right? Management is obviously getting your players around you, getting your tactics right? But the most important thing is game management. And the higher you go, like in Europe, you don't get 5 minutes.
No.
You don't see something, go, oh, Jesus. You see something, you got to change it within a minute or two. You've got to adopt quick. And that's where Stephen's downfall was. And I said it, he's brilliant at spotting talent. He's obviously a good motivator. He has likability, which is a huge plus. But when it came to game management, I've done forensic analysis on a lot of the games and I'm screaming, I'm throwing slippers at the television. Oh, Jesus, quick. 1-1-0, 2-1, 3-1. And you're going, And then it's repetitive. And then not only are you looking at the manager, you're looking at the coach and staff, and say, hold on a minute, tap him on the shoulder, say, boss, we're going to be slaughtered down that side. It's like boxing.
Yeah.
The higher you go in boxing, the quicker you go, right? You don't see a flaw, right? Or you show a flaw, you're knocked out. And I'm sure it's international rugby.
International rugby, one error, it's a try.
That's it.
One mistake.
That's it.
And I'm not talking about a big error. It's just a slight second.
Yeah, but that's, see, I'm not, I won the double, well, we won the double, the players obviously and the coaches staff and all that in 33 months. Could I manage Ireland? Not in a million years. And we went out to Europe and beat a German team on merit and we knocked Aberdeen out on merit, right? But that didn't qualify me to be an international manager because you need to work at the highest level where the tempo of the game is like that. So it's that, you're not, oh geez, at 1-0, you're going, hold on, we can, and you have to preempt everything and be switched on and game management. The other stuff, like you fellas that, head coaches, to go into that, right? But you fellas that stand in the dugout and they see things before anyone else and they're the most important ones on the match day.
But it's amazing you said, I'll go straight back to an example. We played France in Croke Park. We were playing incredibly well. Just one part of the game, one person took line speed at a different rate to the rest. One slight foot ahead and Clark, a brilliant winger, able to expose them. And I always think of it, you're right, the air is thin the higher you go up. It's maybe like it makes it so, so difficult.
Well, you even look at the top level, right? The ball flies into you, right? And you don't get three touches. Like the kid that's playing for, he played for Derby for a while and he played for Ireland, he's playing for Bristol City now, is it? He's from Bray.
Jason
Great kid. Determined the whole lot. Needs three touches every single time. You'll never get that at the top level. boom, and it's gone. And you know, you got to know what you're doing before it comes. And it comes in Premier League football or European football, away games. There's no sprinklers in Ireland. Away games, it's like a bar of soap on a greasy ice rink. And if your touch is not impeccable, you're finished. It's. And you know what my best ally was when I won the double? Sean Edwards.
No way.
Sean came to me, stayed with me for about 6 weeks. And he actually trained on the pitch with us. And he was doing this rush stuff with Wasps at the time. And he said to me, Rod, defence wins championships. Defence wins. And that's not being an obstacle team behind the ball. It means where you defend and you defend and you do it right. And the art of defending and add a bit of flair to it. You know, so people have to understand, you know, Keith has attributes. I've seen him probably making his debut or thereabouts. And I've seen what his attributes were. And you can play it at 40. Because he doesn't charge all over the place.
Yeah.
But he does it right, Keane. He gets other people to charge all over the place. He knows when to drop. He knows when to game manage. And I was at the game last week. And if Keith had been on the pitch, they wouldn't have lost or drawn. No way.
Just on that, Keith, though, because you've crossed over. You mentioned it earlier on from you were working in the trade. Just how has professionalism led to your life being different? You know, the lifestyle balance. Have you got that?
You know what? I'm a man that needs to be like kept busy. I actually have too much time sometimes now. You know, you finish training at 1:30, 2:00. And
yeah.
I don't necessarily like it. I actually enjoy it. When I was working, getting up at 6:00 in the morning, you did go to the gym before I walked. I walk 7 to 4, 7 to 5. Then you head off to train 3-4 nights a week. You play a match, and then the weekend you're busy with training. So I enjoyed that more, but my body didn't. Like I was 27 playing, and I could feel it through games. You know, at the day or two later. But now I'm actually since I'm full time last year, I've never felt sore after a game once, and it's because of. I used to
rest, recovery. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And the only one time I've ever, funny story there, you talk about work that he knows John. So he will play with a lad, John Toll, who he's probably going to be father a lot down the line. But he was away, and I'll never forget it. We were playing Duda Lounge in Europe. So he was away, and I was looking after the job. And the other fellow working with us didn't drive. So Wednesday night, you played them. Beat them, got through in Europe. The next night, I'm up at 6:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And I remember having a dead leg, getting up the ladder, and the other lad's an old lad, so he couldn't drive, I was getting the lad taken out, and then I remember the fellow saying to me, he says, yeah, welcome to Irish football.
I got off a scaffolding in Ring's End. Got off a scaffolding, went home, had a shower, went to the airport, and we played Standard Liège in Belgium, right? And I remember they beat us 3-2 on that loan, and it was a respectable result. They had 3 World Cup winners in the team. We got there, right? I got off the scaffold and went over, played, and they battered us. They absolutely annihilated us. I touched the ball 8 times, right? And that was 8 tip-offs. They beat us 8-1. And I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it, Donegan, right? So I knew this kid, right? So the fellow up front of me was Michael O'Connor. And he looked up and he goes, lovely, Randy, says, we'll be out here in 10 minutes. I said, no, that's the scoreboard. It's 8-0, right? But the other thing, when the game was over, there was a fella like you, Donny, he was a gladiator, about 6'4". Big shock of oily black hair, right? And he stripped off, right? And he was like chiseled out of marble. And he said to me, you swapped the jersey. And I looked around, about 40,000 in the ground. I go, wait, we go up the tunnel here, you know. I had no definition of muscle, snow. I had the shape of a vest. You know the vest from being on the scaffolding?
Yeah.
Big red shoulders and a big white belly, you know what I mean? So I said, we'll do it up the tunnel. So I'll never get out. I gave up the tunnel and I gave him. And I went and put the jersey on. We sat in the dressing room. The manager came in, Turlock. And he was ripping the devil. He comes to me and he goes, where'd you get that fucking jersey? And I went, what? Where'd you get the jersey? I says, the chap asked me to swap. Well, go in and get it back. We need that for Sunday. That's the truth. Now, I didn't go in, but when I got a St. Anthony's medal on my mother-in-law, St. Anthony's the patron saint of last causes, right? And when I gave the jersey and it was on it, when I got it back, the medal was gone. So I had to face the mother-in-law as well. I got done for a medal. But yeah, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
And then the lads are going to lash.
Yeah, okay.
I remember we went to Brussels to the airport and the lads were poured onto the floor.
Yeah, but it was the time. You know, it was different times of it.
But see, when you go to Europe, all you wanted was Cyprus, Portugal, Spanish club, anywhere where the sun was. You didn't care. And when I went on my first trip of Bowles, we played in the stadium against Sporting Lisbon. And I have a picture, I've seen it yesterday. We went to Portugal in September in woolly jumpers, short and tie, blazers. The sweat was beating Elvis over there. You know, yeah. You plan ahead, get them for that, and deal with the rest of the season. But look, we got through it. And,
yeah.
You know, I really think it's brilliant for the kids now, you know.
Keith, I'll go to you first. Bulls would be seen as the Dublin club. Would that be a kind of fair reflection, or is it just around your club?
They're my club, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I'm sure you have all supporters will claim the Dubs clubs, Shells, Bows, yeah. Pats, you know, and you have Shells and the Rovers fighting over who owns Rings End, you know, down the road from where I am. But as you said, to me, Bows is a Dublin club, you know, and,
yeah.
You know, and there is, like, there's two derbies as we talked about today, but there's only really one derby in Dublin derby, and you'll know, yeah, it is Bows and Rovers. You yeah. know, you have other clubs that can yeah. try and push it, but let's be honest, there is only one real Dublin derby.
But isn't that great to have that rivalry? You like that? That's not made, or like that is real. You know what I mean? You grew up in that.
No, 100%. And I think probably in the last 5 to 10 years, probably the hatred, I think, is going out a little bit in terms of where you can't tackle as much. Then the influx of foreign players coming in, they don't see it as much if they're not around a long time, you know. Yeah. So they might be as hard at hitting the tackles as both then the product and the playing pitch is getting better, as you say.
Well, I managed and played for both clubs, and it was brilliant. I made my debut back from England for Bows against Rovers against Bows, scored the winner. And then I managed Rovers when we beat Bows one night, 3-2. And then I managed Bows when we were 4-1 down at half time.
Stop rubbing it in.
Haven't heard that one.
Yeah, here we go.
I'm still dining out on that one. So a great rivalry. And if you're ever going to get the bullet in the club, Bows or Rovers, and you're on tin ice, lose that fixture.
Yeah, okay.
And it's justified by the supporters. Yeah. I don't care. Get them out.
Three times, I think it was Stephen Kenny, Trevor Crowley, and then when we beat them the next day, they were gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we were 4-1 down. I was told at half time, you're getting sacked at the final whistle.
Yeah, my God, you're joking.
Who said?
No, I'm serious. It's in the book. It's in the book. I was walking up, and Jim Fitz told me, Jim Fitzpatrick, remember we were actually filming?
Wow.
He was my ally. He was my man on the board. I was walking up 4-1 down. Rovers having a party. The Bows supporters were leaving Santry Stadium at the time. The Santry Stadium. And I'm walking up, and Jim Cox is rather second at the final whistle. So I dipped into all my coaching and managerial knowledge and all. I went into Jackson. How are you doing? I said, Dad, give us a dig out.
Throw us the bone.
Dad, come on. And I went in and we banged him over 6-4.
Wow.
And we beat them 6-4. We scored 5 in the second half. And what happened was, we blitzed them in the second half. And the ones that were sacking me, I walked up, and it was the only time in my life in football to get such a result like that, that I was sad, frustrated, happy, numb.
Yeah.
Every emotion on the planet. I couldn't even go for a point after. I thought, what is this all about? Mm. You know what I mean?
But only sport can do that, isn't it?
That's great. It's great.
But you touched on it there, but being like nearly the pantomime villain and the saviour of different clubs, how have you found that? You know what I mean? Do you?
We when I was manager of Bows, I never went to see anyone play or anything like that. I just dictate what you had. But I'd wear pinstripe suits and, you know, and spats and all that. They'd go mad, they'd all slaughter me. But I loved the crack.
Yeah,
loved it. And I'd call out managers. But Ollie Bone used to ring me and say, Rod, get on the red. I was on Joe Duffy one day. And Joe Duffy says, Jesus. Oh no, Jerry Ryan. Jerry Ryan says, Jesus, I don't go to football. I'm going to Talca Park tonight. Ollie Dream said, Rob, we need crowds and we need a few quid. So I'd start saying mad stuff and calling out the manager, I'm going to knock him out and all that. And next of all, place would be full. And that's what it was. But you're a clown if you're not winning.
Yeah.
But when you're winning, you get away with it.
But you've earned the ride as well. You broke your leg. We were chatting outside 4 times, wasn't it? And there was a time you, a really bad concussion, was it?
I got anointed. I got the last rights off the man that writes in the Sunday World.
No way. The last rights?
Wow. I mean, I just, I know when I broke my leg, can I tell you a rugby story?
Yes, yeah.
I broke my leg up in Belfield and I got brought to the Mead Hospital, and Ireland were playing that afternoon in Lansdowne Road, and I was in there and my leg was all over the shop, and next of all there's another cubicle in there and a fella was brought in. So next of all I'm brought in, a doctor comes in and he starts pulling me ribs, and I'm going, no, my leg is in bits. Oh, and the man in the other cubicle, I won't name him, he's an international rugby player, says, I'm in fucking here, you fucking idiot. Right? It was an international from Lansdowne Hurston Cup with a broken rib. So the other thing, I went up with, we were playing Rovers up in Milltown. I was playing with the dog, we were touch and go to win the league, and balls were flying through the air then, and Torlach said to me, Rod, if you can't get there, just challenge. Just break them up, you know what I mean? So I was jumping up, but I jumped up and Mick Neville was coming out and I jumped up to challenge, but he came straight out, I came in and he smashed me right in the back of the head.
Wow.
And all I remember was hitting the ground and everything in my body going like that. It was like an epileptic fit. My leg was going like that. My arms were going down. I couldn't talk. And all I remember was Dan McKinley standing over me. And I'm going. And then they come over and I conked out anyway. And then they took me out on a stretcher. I swallowed my tongue. They sorted that one out. And then I was about, I think I was unconscious for about 15 minutes. And my wife came round with her sister, Ellen, who just lost her husband. And she said, Jesus, Carolyn, I hope you're not going to be widowed like me. So they came and they wouldn't let Carolyn in. And Michael Darcy, is that his name? He's a priest anyway.
Okay.
He came in. Oh, I don't remember this. But he was doing the last rites and the whole lot. And then I woke up in, I think it could have been the one up in Mead Street, the Mead Hospital or something like that. And yeah,
jeez,
that was it.
Wow.
You know, and that was my fourth concussion.
Wow.
I was talking about rugby and that.
Yeah, but it was different. Sorry, I don't mean to be harsh, but the knowledge around it, you probably didn't even know with the soccer balls at that time. It's a pride. Yeah, it is. It is. It's a worry. But even for you, someone like you, Keith, it will finish. Are you preparing yourself? Like you've had a taste of it, you've worked before, but are you preparing yourself for life after soccer?
Yeah, so I'm like to have a trade behind me,
good
which
on.
Is good.
Yeah.
I'm also, I'm just finished my B licence. I'm going to get involved now like that. You can never have time during your career to actually get involved. You usually, when you finish your career, you have a year doing your license, then you get involved with a team.
Yeah.
Of time to kill now. I might as well get involved at the 17s or the 15s or 19s. So then down the line that I hopefully then have my own little business going and also then be managing and coaching. But as aspirations go, I would be like the manager of Ireland one day. You
brilliant.
Know, and people might say, you never be that. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
But that's my dream. That's where I want to go. If I don't get it, no problem.
Good
that's
on
where
you.
I'm going to aim for.
Donald, can I just finish on something?
Absolutely.
I caught my grandson after you.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, it's in the book.
No way. God love him.
And we did. And I'm disappointed. He didn't say, how are you, pal, when I walked in. I met Donald up in City West when you were doing school.
Happy days.
I'm in Reinhard's one night locked. You were just playing someone. And you were all in the corner. Well, you weren't there, obviously.
Well, I used to go in to get him out.
And I was well oiled, right? And they're all there. And next of all, I looked over and I said to Carolyn, I said, Carolyn, there's the man I called Donica, I'm my daughter. I says, oh, Jesus, yeah. And I went over, all right, big man. I said, I caught me grandson after you. And Shane said to me, Shane's a lovely name. And I looked up and said,
Shane Oregon. You know what's happening.
I only remember the light and the height. And I think it's not too. I know he's a big winner.
It always happens.
That's the truth.
And it comes both ways because I actually get the up from that side of it. He scored the most amazing try when Ireland beat England.
Yeah,
looked
over
at
the corner. Yeah.
Ron O'Gara, crossfield kick.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
scores it. It's
it
most,
was brilliant.
Yeah, and everyone keeps coming up to me. That try you got in Croke Park was unbelievable over there. Thanks a million.
And you know what? Take it.
Roddy, what's next for you? What's next for you? We saw you on the Tommy Tiernan show. Well done. You were brilliant on it. You were so honest, so open. But what are you looking forward to?
I look forward to everything. I'm not being corny.
No, I know
right?
that.
I just live in the happiest time of my life. As I was saying, the game when you're playing, if you come in to me, I said, last quarter, lads, throw caution to the wind. Whatever happens, happens. You get a win, a draw, or a loss, but let's throw caution to the wind. And at this moment in time, you know, I'm all right. I've a great wife, I've beautiful kids, I've great grand. I just have it all.
Yeah.
I have it all at the minute. I'm living the dream. I walk for Ireland. What I do is I try to dedicate myself and my wife's time to staying as fit and healthy and enjoying myself as much as possible. And I'd love another job. And now Rodeo called us out. I would love another manager's job. However, I might have to pay for the club myself.
Oh, and here we go. Dot, dot, dot. More as
money.
We have it.
Small money. So there's a club in England that had my eye on that I could take. And I would love to do that. But do you know what? As I said to Tommy Tiernan, I don't plan ahead.
Yeah.
I don't.
You're in
I don't,
it.
I don't plan
you
ahead. I
moment.
Really don't. I live in the moment with as much responsibility as I can. Right? But I just hope I live long enough to get another job. I love one.
Yeah. We didn't touch on Stephen, obviously, but
yeah,
it was an incredible time. It was an incredible time, wasn't it, around Irish
oh,
sport?
Oh my God. His film is coming out on Netflix now in the next couple of weeks and it's called One Night in Mill Street.
Yeah, amazing.
Right. I sit down and I can't believe that's my little brother.
Yeah.
And to, you know, like you said, I can't be the manager of Ireland. You can be anything you want to be, Keith. Yeah. You come in, you want to be. Stephen, you say, I'm going to be world champion. I'd never say I'm not going to win. I'm going to say, oh, geez, I hope he does, you know, for because of what he put in. Anyway, get it back what you put in. You went to the heights with the Lions too and all that. It was just unreal. Mill Street for me will never be replicated in anything in my life as in pride. And that's not disrespect to Carolyn having five children. I've never experienced pride in my life ever since or before that, when that was my brother.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And it's still brilliant, you know.
It gives me goosebumps because it was your brother, but it felt like all of us. It was the first moment, and I hate doing it, but there was always that chip, Ireland versus England. Yeah, and like, we didn't see Eubank as Eubank. We saw him as England, you know what I mean? And Steve standing there and just doing it twice, you know what I mean? It was magic.
And a Parky Quave the second time and coming out to Old Roche in the Raval. It was just unbelievable.
Great times. You know?
Brilliant, brilliant. And then we got a good stretch out of it. We went to, I was in the world champion belt carrier I am now. That's my new title. And we went and we had the time of our lives.
Dead right.
And I had a goatee at the time and I was mistaken for Stephen many times, purposely, right? I was in Browns. I know you were never in there.
Yeah.
I know you were never in there.
I don't know where it is.
I did the Browns in the West End with Caroline and another lad, John Swift, and his wife. They looked down the taxi, said the taxi driver, tell him the champ is in the car, gave him a price for a drink. We have the champ. Steve, come on, mate, come on. I remember going up the stairs. And Naomi Campbell was there, and your man out Spandau Bally, who my wife thought was brilliant.
Oh, wow.
Big fella. What's his name? Spandau Bally. Anyway, so I was giving it the champ. Ever thought of Stephen? I even thought it was Stephen, right? Free champagne and everything. And I remember Naomi Campbell sitting on me knee. I remember a bouncer touched me on the shoulder going, you all right, mate? And I'm going, am I all right? I'm from Canberra. He says, Naomi Campbell's on me knee. Spandau Bally's dancing around me, missus. Are you having a laugh? Free champagne. You were asking me, am I all right? It doesn't get any better than this, you know. But we had great times. And then we all came to an end. It was the right time for Stephen. He has his faculties and his field, Bob, and that's all that matters, you know.
Roddy, never change, honestly.
Still bleeding right now.
No, honestly, thanks for being, honestly, an unbelievable personality, not only within your sport, but in general. Good on you. Keep going, and we're delighted to have you today. As well, Keith, speedy recovery to you. Looking forward to seeing you back out on the pitch, and keep going. Whatever comes your way, we wish you nothing but success. Thanks so much, lads, for joining us on the podcast today. Welcome back to Under Construction. It is time for our Supplier's Corner. And joining Patrick and myself today is Richard Sloan from Sunnis. Richard, how are you?
Very well, Dunica. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. I know Patrick knows it inside out, but you might give us a brief overview of Sunnis.
Yeah, so Sunnis Bathrooms will be probably Ireland's leading and largest single bathroom brand. We started from humble beginnings in 1978, and one man kind of went on a journey of bathroom, selling bathroom products to merchants all around the country. And I suppose the business as it stands today employs well over 100 people in our Dublin HQ. So essentially how I'd best describe it is we design, manufacture and distribute bathroom products into the retail market. So obviously Chadwicks being a very important retail partner, a long-standing customer of ours. And then servicing really the different addressable markets. So people involved in refurbishing a bathroom or building a new home, any of the self-build projects, all the way through to, you know, new house builds, you know, on the larger developer scale, and then commercial type projects as well. So we've pretty much a broad reach across all those demographics.
So bathrooms have become such a sophisticated part of the house, you know, and you talk to developers and they'll always say to you, bathrooms and kitchens sell houses, you know, because that's it. My dad said to me, rest him, he said, geez, ever since they brought the bathrooms inside and the food outside, the world's gone a bit bonkers, you know. But
what a great line.
Because that's how it used to be, you know. But now they're so important, they're so integral into the design of a house and how it looks. And it's the fashion business, really.
It really is. But I suppose the level of consideration that goes into bathrooms now is really come on so much. I was even thinking about this coming over. Like when I was growing up as a kid, like you had one bathroom in the house, you know, and, you know, the idea of a shower was a couple of rubber, you know, connectors onto the taps.
That's right.
Whereas now, you know, the kitchen is considered the heart of the home, but really the bathrooms are integral. And, you know, there's often multiple bathrooms now when people
kitchen's the heart, the bathroom's the escape.
Yeah, well, now you have it. But I suppose people are so much more demanding of the bathroom in terms of what they want from it. You know, so it's obviously, it serves lots of obvious functions. We know that. But as you said rightly, Patrick, it is a place of escape and people like to unwind. I suppose the morning routine, the evening routine. Yeah. And people's just expectations from their bathroom, not just from a functionality point of view, but as you rightly said, from a design and a style point of view, it gives an opportunity to people to bring some of their own, you know, kind of fashion identity and style identity into the home.
Yeah. And I know, like, we have showrooms in pretty much every location. And but there's the vast range that is out there, you know, whether it's a big bathroom or a small bathroom, or you're trying to fit it into a caboose under the stairs or whatever it is. Like, the range is extensive. And I know you have a fantastic showroom that I've been in myself, and we regularly send people to if they're, you know, starting from with a completely blank canvas and just to start giving them some ideas.
Yeah, the purpose for the showroom really is to help people on that journey. It's probably like a pre-purchase support. So naturally, all of our products will be sold through our retail network, and obviously the national coverage that Chadwicks have. People the length and breadth of Ireland can buy our product through one of your locations. But you guys have restrictions in terms of space and how much product you can show. So the reason for having the showroom at our own headquarters, it gives an opportunity to show all of the products, the full range. It's quite diverse, as you said, so much variation in size, colour, different finishes. So we kind of say to people, look, it's about touch, feel and compare. So we have three qualified people. They're our product experts.
Yeah.
And they're really there just to hold the hand of the consumer or the trade guy for that matter. And, you know, we'd often have tradespeople either bring their clients with them or sometimes send the clients up, and we'll actually do a lot of that heavy lifting around getting the product specification nailed down. And you'll often come away with a few questions to answer. You won't always nail it down on your first visit. We do encourage people to bring dimensions with them. It's the biggest mistake people make. And when they arrive, they just realise, we start asking about, well, what size is your bathroom? And of course, they don't realise what it is. So we see it as a bit of a collaboration between, obviously, the client has a desire in terms of what they hope to achieve. We're there to support them around features and the benefits of the product, really, and why things, you might go for one product over another. And then you have to dovetail that back down with the man or the woman who's actually going to go and the various trades who will install the bathroom. Because if you get it right, you know, you should have a long, long, you know, 15, 20 years of enjoyment from your bathroom. But if you get it wrong, it can be a costly mistake. And we want to try and prevent that for people.
That's the beauty of the showroom, though, isn't it? Like you mentioned there, we all want it to be functional, but our styles are different. Yeah. And I remember myself personally, when it came to our bathroom, where the feel mattered to me, the touch. And you know what I mean? Like Jenny would give me a slagging over it. It turns donors. And I was there, no, it's the way it does.
Yeah. You're dead right on that, Donegal, because we've worked with some great interior designers over the years, and one in particular who I've done a lot of collaboration with. And one of the things she would always encourage her clients is, how do you want the space to feel? Because most people focus on the visuals and they have their Instagram and all their different kind of visuals that they bring in. But essentially, you know, all of that interior design evokes a feeling. Mm. And you want to kind of get that right as well.
But we're a country who embraced colour in bathrooms years ago, decades, the avocado green and the,
yes,
and the salmon pink bathrooms, they were all there, you know.
See,
please don't tell me the avocado green's coming back.
It is in a version. I mean, we do offer a range of colours in ceramics. I suppose the difference now is, I suppose back then when you were referring to those designs, it was kind of like a full colour wash. Everything was the one colour. Now it's about kind of blending colours and different metals and finishes. But colour is, and vibrant colour, like we offer a range of furniture, which is probably where people start now from a product selection point of view, because really storage is so important. You know, some, you know, consumer surveys that we've run ourselves, and nearly 60% of people don't have enough storage. People just have so much stuff now, right?
The blokes are taking up as much space as the
worse,
girls.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I'd say you've loads of hair products now that need to be catered for.
I don't.
He's diverting. Don't be fooled by the hair. He's a big manscaper.
But yeah, we do need storage. So I suppose the furniture piece is really where people start. That's like a focal point.
And you get getting, a bit of pop of colour coming in there.
You get a pop of colour in there. Yeah. And then you're kind of, you're building around that theme then in terms of, you know, the metal finishes, the different colours. And whereas chrome was kind of all in for years, and that's all you, was the go-to colour. Now you've got your brushed brass, your golds, your blacks is really a staple colour now. My mum is in her 80s. She'll kill me for saying that, but we renovated her bathroom last year, and off her own bat, she selected all black taps and black showers, and there was no kind of pushing from me. So it just goes to show, you know, like at every age now, people recognise, you know, that the bathroom is a space that they want to get the design right. And
Richard, your mum has good taste. I went for a black bathroom as well.
You've got great
still
taste
delighted
as well.
With it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, and I think it's very much it's here to stay, and probably blending, you know, different colours now, like whereas you don't have to have all your metal finishes in black. People are mixing metals as well.
I see electronics and you know, being able to turn your shower on from the bed, you know, before you get up and set the temperature so that it's just piping hot when you walk into
it. Yeah, and again,
is that a big trend?
Yeah, it's a growing trend. Certainly in the UK market, we would say they're far more developed around smart technology and digital showering than we would be in the Irish market. But I do see it as a growing trend. I think sustainability then is something that's important for a lot of consumers as well. And certainly as a bathroom brand who sells a lot of products over the course of a year that, you know, use water, we're doing our best as well to try and, I suppose, optimise the design of those products to consume less water. Mm. So we would have, you know, we're a member of the Irish Green Building Council. We're a voluntary member of the Unified Water Label in the UK. And that's a way of registering and designing the products to meet like an A-rated standard. So again, taking the maximum flush on a toilet down from 6 and 4 litres down to 4 and 2.5 makes a material difference to your water consumption. So trying to put some of these technologies in there as added value, mm-hmm. because the consumer, while they want it, they don't necessarily want to pay, you know, double the price for it. So trying to find some of this added value in the product design to give that benefit and help people save water over the course of a year.
Richard, advice for, say, a builder or a contractor with their client, what should they be thinking to help get going? Obviously, you mentioned heading to the showrooms with the plans, but mood boards, how do you kind of...
Look, it's probably obvious to say it, but it's really a collaboration. I think from the trade customer perspective, he really wants to ensure that the product is going to be of a durable, suitable quality from a performance point of view, that it's available to him. So when he goes to actually start the job, that the materials are on site. So I really encourage this kind of collaborative approach. It's never too early to start the planning process around your bathroom. And particularly if you're involved in a self-build project or a major renovation where you're going to be moving waste and pipes around, often people come to these decisions kind of, they start looking at the bathrooms kind of late in the day.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, waste positions have already been determined and it doesn't necessarily suit the end result. So getting in at a very early stage and thinking about what I call high-level decisions. When we get into product selection stage, I would say from your trade, typical trade, builder, plumber, installer, don't be afraid to engage with us and leverage our expertise, because to be fair to these guys, they can't be experts on every product in across all the different brands and suppliers that are out there. Our job is to be close to our product. So, you know, if they like what they see in terms of the product design, value for money, availability, and all those things that I feel we address, to get into some of the more nuanced conversations, we have the expertise, we have the resources, and we're a big support to Chadwicks and to the trade community. So actually, send your customers to us or talk to us. We've got qualified technical people in our product design team and after sales team who would have worked on the tools installing bathrooms. So that whole kind of focus around the installer is absolutely central to what we're trying to do, because we want happy customers at the end of it who has a bathroom that they can be proud of and enjoy, and it's going to last them for a long time and have that longevity. So we just want to try and get it right for them.
You mentioned sustainability earlier, and I know, I don't think we've got quite here in this country, but I know in Holland, for instance, they take I'm going to call it pre-loved sanitary ware and they repurpose it back into social housing and things like that to stop those, you know, those baths and showers and toilets going into landfill. Do you see us moving in that direction in any way?
I'm not sure. I do see it as a growing awareness around sustainability, but probably the big move we've made this year around repurposing products, at least, they're not pre-sold or pre-used, but we would be quite a significant supporter for Habitat for Humanity.
Okay.
So any product has fallen out of kind of the current offering, we call it end of line, but absolutely perfectly good product. And it's difficult to sell that into your existing channels because everybody has an appetite for what's new and what's current. So we've been donating quite a material sum of product and they can use that product then to sell on.
And delighted with it, and it
goes towards their objectives as well. So we're trying to do as much as we can around, as I said, the product development operationally, you know, things like green energy, you know, reuse, recycling and lots of different things around solar and all those kind of good initiatives for the business. But there's a lot more to be done as well. I don't know from an Irish psyche point of view whether we're as well developed or will be as our Dutch friends, but maybe in time that's where it will go.
Sure.
So we'll watch this space.
So Richard, that's been really interesting. Thanks so much for coming in and sharing all the developments that are going on in the business. Great to see you. Great to have you in here, and continued success to you.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks, Dunica.
Cheers. Thanks.
Thank you.